Kohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. We're going to be talking today about something interesting. Perhaps some of you saw this story in the New York Times. It's about a teenager protesting her grounding by creating a site on Facebook. Now, what makes this particularly interesting is not that there's a teenager on Facebook. It's not that there are parents who are now in a position to discipline a 15-year-old for misbehavior. It's that, this is getting national attention because she has now attracted well over 1,000 friends on Facebook to protest her grounding. She's trying to get ungrounded. She calls it her groundation. What we're going to be talking about, though, is not just teenagers and Facebook or social media, but the whole complexity of parenting in a postmodern age with this highly digital, very public world we're living in. There are so many dimensions to this story we're going to be looking at. I'll be putting up a link to the story at the website in case you want to go look at the story yourself. But it turns out that this particular girl, Tess Chapin, she's 15 years old from Sunnyside in Queens, New York. She's been grounded for 5 weeks for coming home late from a party, which she also evidently was involved in underage drinking. Her parents flipped, according to the reporter, Susan Dominus, and they grounded her for 5 weeks. As she says, quote, "That's my childhood right there. Please join this group so that I can convince them to unground me. Please, please, please." Well, let me tell you, we're going to be looking at that story and one other, because my guess is there's not going to be a whole lot of sympathy out there for Tess, but there should be some sympathy for parents trying to figure out what it's like to parent in this very, very public age. What happens when all your friends on Facebook know you've been grounded or whatever? Let's talk about this on the Albert Moeller Program. My number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is one of those subjects that parents need to talk about at multiple levels. And I have a feeling that as most of you look at this particular news story, you're going to discover you've got sympathy with these parents, but you're also going to wonder if they're nearly so strict as they think they are. We're going to talk about that as well. Also, we're going to look at a couple of other incidents that have arisen to raise, much of the same question. We'll be turning to that in just a moment. In the meantime, we're going to look at some issues in the news. Big news in Massachusetts, the race, the special election for a partial term to the United States Senate. The Senate seat, of course, that was recently occupied by the late Senator Edward M. Kennedy. That election comes tomorrow, and wonder of wonders, all the political pundits are beginning to scratch their heads on this one. It looks like that Republican State Senator Scott Brown is ahead of Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley, which means even though Republicans are outnumbered 3-1 in Massachusetts, the Republican candidate appears to be running ahead. All the polls put together, he is at least in a draw, which is remarkable in itself. And most political observers think it's going to come down to turnout tomorrow, which could really bring about a very light Democratic turnout in a heavily Democratic state, which could elect a Republican state senator whose name was virtually unknown to most Americans to the United States Senate. Now, the ramifications of that are huge, and we'll be following that if indeed it happens that way, because this spells in many ways a huge complexity for President Barack Obama's effort to get health care reform passed in the Senate. He needs all 60 votes he had on Christmas Eve. And this would be one short of that, because now State Senator Scott Brown has made very clear that he will not vote for that legislation. So we'll be tracking that with you. But something very interesting has emerged in this campaign that really deserves our attention. Time and time again, we've come back to conscience clauses and the importance of understanding conscience in the professions. And in particular, you look at something like abortion. And the conscience clause has operated heretofore in such a way that physicians and healthcare professionals from nurses on could not be compelled to participate in an abortion. And those conscience clauses have been generally honored by the courts. They've been very important. We had, for instance, recently, former Governor Rod Blagojevich in Illinois revoked the conscience clause for pharmacists for the morning after pill. We had President Barack Obama in the early weeks of his administration send signals that he was in this healthcare reform not going to be honoring that kind of conscience clause. But it has arisen in the Massachusetts special election to the United States Senate, and it did so because the Attorney General, Martha Coakley, the Democratic candidate, made an amazing statement in an interview with Ken Pittman, who is a radio host there in Massachusetts. I want you to hear what she had to say. You're going to hear the voice of Ken Pittman, the interviewer, and Massachusetts Attorney General and senatorial candidate Martha Coakley. Listen.
I would not pass a bill, as Scott Brown filed amendment, to say that if people believe that they don't want to provide services that are required under the law and under Roe versus Wade, that they can individually decide to not follow the law. The answer is that the answer to that question is no.
Okay, so a service.
Let's be clear, because Scott Brown filed an amendment to a bill in Massachusetts that would say that hospital and emergency room personnel could deny emergency contraception to a woman who came in who'd been raped.
Right. If you're a Catholic and you believe what the Pope teaches, any form of birth control is a sin, you don't want to do that.
I know, but we have a separation of church and state here, Ken. Let's be clear.
Yeah, right? But in the emergency room, you still have your religious freedom.
The law says that people are allowed to have that. And so then if you can have religious freedom, you probably shouldn't work in the emergency room.
Okay. Rare is a comment like that made with such candor. And there you have it. You can have religious freedom, she says, but you probably shouldn't work in the emergency room. Wow. You know, just think about the ramifications of that. Let's just track that logic and see where it goes. Where else should you not work if you have convictions? It just tells you again and again that we are in big trouble in this country when religious freedom, in this case religious liberty, the conscience of one's own convictions as a professional and as a believer, that is now being put in a category where you have to put that in safe places, presumably in church, perhaps if you run a little Christian bookstore. But the moment you try to be a physician, a pharmacist, a nurse, well, you shouldn't work, she says, in the emergency room. Now, let's be very clear. She is not talking here about a life or death situation. That's not even on the table. She's not talking about some kind of medical emergency where life is at stake. She's talking about someone who comes in and is asking for an abortifacient or form of contraception by pill. And she's saying that Catholic, in this case, personnel there in Massachusetts, that's the big complexity, after all, given the demographics of that state, that they should be compelled to violate their own conscience. And, of course, that means that abortion's the same thing. I mean, there's no distinction there, just in terms of the logic of her statement. She says, if you can't, because, and by the way, that's clear because she's the one who invoked Roe v. Wade. In that interview, if you heard her, she is the one who said, this is a legal right given Roe v. Wade. Well, that's not the right in that case to a contraceptive pill. That's the right to an abortion. And she said, look, you can have your religious freedom, but you probably shouldn't work in the emergency room. Folks, I hope you heard that and took the full measure of that. Because we hear some scary things in American public life, but I'll tell you, that is one of the scariest. And it's not scary because I think she doesn't mean it, and she has thus subsequently clarified it. No, she didn't clarify it. She meant it. And that makes it all the scarier. Very interesting things going on in this program. Just a few days ago, we talked about the Green Revolution and how environmentalism has become a substitute religion for many people. Just in case we needed any further evidence, the New York Times again provides it, this case Saturday's edition. The headline is, Pastors in Northwest Find Focus in Green. William Yardley wrote the article, and he's going about really reporting on the Northwest. He acknowledges it's a pretty low church-going rate to begin with in that area. Also, it's just an area in which there is a preponderance of environmental interest, but he comes back to say, across the Northwest, where church attendance has long been low but concern for the environment high, some church leaders and parishioners are ringing doorbells, they're going door to door, to inform neighbors, many of whom have never stepped inside the sanctuary down the street, about ways to conserve energy and lower their utility bills. Folks, I'm not making this up. These are folks who very clearly have said they don't want to go door to door with the gospel. They will go door to door with environmentalism. Deb Conklin, pastor at Liberty Park United Methodist Church in Spokane, said, quote, I've never been good at door-to-door evangelism, but this has been so fun. Everybody wants to talk to you. It's exciting. It's ministry, end quote. You know, Mark Twain once said, there is no one happier than a writer not writing. Folks, sometimes I wonder if there's no one happier than a Christian not bearing witness to the gospel. Because it looks like There are many, many of us who will do anything we can to avoid actually telling people about the gospel. Look, it's hard enough to go door-to-door for any reason. But if I were to go door-to-door in this case, I'd sure be embarrassed to be going door-to-door with advice about how you can conserve energy rather than with advice about how you can avoid the judgment of God in hell and know the peace of God and eternal life through Jesus Christ. You know, folks, every once in a while you have to read something like this just to get that wake-up call that says, listen, who are we? Who are we really? What do we believe? And based upon what we really believe about the gospel, how do we have to look at this? You'll find my article on the New Religion of Green on my website at albertmiller.com. You'll find this article at today's program, the article from the New York Times, A New Focus in Green. We're going to come back to talk about the complexities of parenting in the digital age on the Albert Miller program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. I did not know about Tess Chapin, who's a 15-year-old girl in Sunnyside, Queens, until the New York Times told me about her, but evidently a lot of other folks did, because she's got a lot of friends on Facebook. She created a Facebook group entitled 1,000 to Get Tess Ungrounded. It had 806 members by Friday, and yet after some public attention, it surpassed well over the 1,000 she was looking for. According to Susan Dominus in the New York Times, this is teenage rebellion, electronic style, peaceful, organized, and apparently contagious. So basically, Tess explains on her group page, she made an honest late-night mistake. Her parents flipped, and they grounded her for 5 weeks. That's my childhood right there, she wrote. Please join so I can convince them to unground me. Please, please, please. I'm reading here from the article by Susan Dominus, New York Times, Saturday. On Monday, the official start of what Tess calls her groundation, she circulated a petition during sixth period and after school at Millennium High School in Lower Manhattan. She's a 10th grader there. At a friend's suggestion, once she got home, she put the petition online, starting the Facebook group, which she categorized under organizations advocacy. The group promptly took off, proving that no adolescent experience in the age of social networking is too small to start a movement. Tess was grounded for what all parents confirmed was a first offense of drinking at a party, all parties concerned, and missing her 11:30 curfew by an hour. Why 5 weeks? Quote, her dad wanted to give her 3 months, said her mother, Jennifer Iselin Chapin, a fundraiser for the National Resources Defense Council. Quote, I wanted a month. This was a compromise. For the duration, there will be no parties for tests, no sleepovers, no sweet 16s, no hanging out at a friend's, and certainly no hanging out at a party where there is no parent present and possibly alcohol served, like the one that landed her in this situation in the first place. Now, this would be a story hardly worthy of our comment, except for a couple of interesting things. Number one, this made the New York Times. That makes it interesting. The second thing, this is a story that made the New York Times, I think, because it does kind of tick off a very interesting issue for parenting in this postmodern age, and that is we're parenting in a whole new way in public. When you have the age of social networking, social media, Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, you name it, we are now parenting, for that matter, living in public, and our kids are a part of that as well. I think it's a good topic for parents to consider. By the way, you're going to have to redefine grounding for me if this girl has Facebook in the first place. I mean, I would think that a meaningful groundation, to use Tess's word, would mean we're not hearing from her. But the whole world is hearing from her, which means I think this is a partially grounding. And I can just say, as one parent, if I had a teenager who came home late from a party like that and went to a party without parents present and imbibed an alcoholic beverage, we would not be talking about a 5 weeks grounding. We'd be talking about, well, as close to eternity as I can handle as a parent. This is a very different thing from my mind, and that grounding would not be, by the way, you know, with Facebook advertising, it would be a grounding that would be notable by the fact of a disappearance from one's digital life. But that's different. And at least my approach to parenting would be different here. But it is interesting, and I took a look at the Facebook ramifications of this. They're pretty serious and pretty interesting. Just looking at how many kids are out doing this kind of thing, how many parents seem to be either unaware or unconcerned. By the way, someone else suggested that the parents create a group entitled 1,000 to support parents who believe in consequences or serious lapses in judgment and care enough about their kids to enforce the rules, end quote. Well, what do you think about this? I'd be very curious. A couple of other things I want to throw on the table in just a moment. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. How has your teenagers in particular or children's involvement in social media affected your parenting? How has it worked in that sense? I think that's very interesting. I think it's a good topic for Christian parents to discuss. How is it that you are handling all this just as a matter of dealing with your teenagers in particular? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Folks, this is not an incidental question. The big question is, how are you going to allow, or how do you allow your kids to involve the world in their own private lives through social media? To what extent has this changed the way that that you think about your role as a parent in the nurture, the raising, and the discipline of your children? Phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Very interesting. I'm going to be very interested to see how parents want to talk about this. I certainly hope parents want to talk about it, because I think it's big. And I think it also raises the whole question about who's in control here. There's another story I want to put on the table here, because this is one that on this particular Monday has really caught my attention. It's from Dallas. No, it's, a suburban Dallas school district in Texas has suspended a four-year-old from his pre-kindergarten class because he wears his hair too long and does not want his parents to cut it. I'm reading this story. It's by James McKinley, and it's in the New York Times as well, Dateline Houston. The boy, whose name is Taylor Pugh, says he likes his hair long and curly. But on Monday night, the school board in Mesquite, Texas, voted unanimously to enforce its ban on Beatles haircuts, much less anything approaching coiffures of bands like Led Zeppelin. School officials say the district's dress code serves to limit distractions in the classroom. No exception could be made for the pint-sized rebel who sat through the hearing with his hair in a ponytail, manifestly bored. It's a trade-off, said one board member. Do the parents value his education more than they value a four-year-old's decision to make his own grooming choices? The boy's parents, Delton Pugh and Elizabeth Taylor, those are their names, have argued that it's unfair to punish Taylor for his longish locks. It suggests, they say, that the district cares more about appearances than education. Quote, I don't think it's right to hold a child down and force him to do something, Mr. Pugh, a tattoo artist, told the Associated Press. It's not hurting him or affecting his education. Okay. Yeah, it seems to me this belongs right with that other story. You know, do parents understand parenting anymore? Here is a dad saying that you shouldn't force a child to do anything. These are parents who have so little self-respect that they are allowing a four-year-old to require a meeting of the school board in Mesquite, Texas, because they won't make him cut his hair. Let me just give you a little hint. When I was 4 years old, I didn't get to choose what kind of haircut I got. It never entered into my consciousness that I was going to get to choose what kind of haircut I got. When I was four, I had no choice in what kind of haircut I got. Okay? When I was 14, I didn't have much say in what kind of haircut I got. This is just so far outside my imagination. But this tells you what school districts have to deal with. And it tells you a great deal about parenting. And it tells you about who's in charge in this world. In New York, I think there's a 15-year-old girl complaining about her, quote, groundation, who's more in charge than her parents realize, because she's out there on Facebook making her case. I think there's a little boy in Mesquite, Texas, who is indeed perhaps a pint-sized rebel, who has parents who seem not to understand that they got a job to do, and it involves telling a four-year-old what kind of hair he's going to have rather than asking him. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think these two stories really do go together. Just coming in a coincidence of timing here from two very different places. You can't write off this story as if it's only from New York, like the story about Tess Chapin. This isn't just a coastal issue. This is Heartland America, Mesquite, Texas. Houston, we got a problem. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Write us at Facebook at the Albert Mohler Program. At Twitter is /Albert Mohler. /Mohler Radio. Tell us what you think. Parenting in a postmodern age. Nobody said it was going to be easy. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Calvin, Pennsylvania. Lorna is listening on WTLR. Go ahead, Lorna.
Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. I was on the way home and was listening to this program, and I really feel that the fear of children has been taken away. Anything that they used to fear, like teachers or parents and God, has all been taken away, and without fear, they don't think or respect any consequences because they know that it's limited.
Yeah, Lorna. I appreciate your call. You got a cell signal there. We were able to make it just talking about how the fear of parents, authority, teachers, even God, that children should have is gone. And I think in most cases that's largely true. I think, first of all, the culture has moved that way. I think the culture has basically kind of followed the Nike creed. I think it is, no fear. And, that's a problem because when we talk about fear in this context, we're really talking about respect. When the Bible speaks about the fear of the Lord being the beginning of wisdom, it means respect. Now, does that mean fear as in being afraid? Of course it does. It means fearing displeasure. And here's a clue. I want to come back and affirm Lorna's point emphatically. If your children do not fear disobeying you, then you're not parenting. You're following your children. Or you're the enablers of their misbehavior. If children do not fear the consequences of misbehaving in school, they'll misbehave. And ultimately, if they do not fear the displeasure of God, there are eternal consequences. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of parents, which means the respect of parents. That doesn't mean they're always afraid of us. If all we knew about God was to be afraid of him, then we really don't understand God. We don't understand his grace and his mercy towards us in Christ. If the child only fears the parent, then there's a big problem. But the reality is that they had better fear the consequences of our displeasure when it comes down to their misbehavior, their disobedience, the failure to obey, the consequences of their own obstinate heart, their own rebellious spirit. They had better fear those things. I don't think Tess Chapin fears too much. This is the girl in New York who has created the Facebook group to protest her, and I love her word, groundation. She's got well over 1,000 now in her group to get Tess ungrounded. Her parents think they're standing firm. And let me say, God bless her parents. They're standing a lot firmer than many parents nowadays stand. But the very fact that she's on Facebook and all the rest, again, here you have a girl who thinks the response to her punishment is to launch a protest. Okay, here is one of my just real admonitions to parents. If your children are protesting the punishment and you're allowing them away to protest it publicly, then they're not broken in their spirit. They are not understanding and accepting the consequences of their misbehavior. And you still got a lot of work to do. Thanks for your call, Lorna. Let's go to Osceola, Nebraska. Toby's listening on KMMJ. What do you think, Toby?
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mohler. Just a couple things. I think in this day and age, parents want to be friends. They don't want to be parents. They do not like to take the responsibility for some of their kids. You talked about having a healthy fear and respect for your parents. I certainly had that growing up. But boy, today it's just pretty hard to find kids with that.
Now, why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of parents would rather be friends. They're maybe not sure. Growing up, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, just coming out of the movements of the 60s and where everybody, a lot of people were saying, if it feels good, do it. And, so you could start to feel that respect for your elders, dissipating over that time period. And I think as we've grown, as we've put another 25, another generation on that, it just has really went downhill.
Yeah, I think that trajectory you rightly tie to the culture. I think that is what's going on. We live in this kind of harmonic age which rebels against all authority. And, you know, it was bad enough when this ethic of personal autonomy was transforming a generation of young adults. But when it comes to now children asserting their rights, declaring themselves, in effect, to be, you know, freestanding individuals, standing on their own little feet, we've got a big problem. And it tells you that the problem doesn't start with the kids. It never starts with the kids. I think the real inside of Toby's statement is that the problem starts with the adults. It starts with the parents. And in both of these cases, boy, I think we see it writ large. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with more.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Fascinating stuff. I really appreciate what the callers have contributed. Also, we've received a good bit by Facebook, Twitter, social media. I just retweeted a comment came from John Mark Harris saying, we live in a techno-centric society. Gen X has their kids at the center of the universe, more than marriage, more than God. You know, I'm talking about the parents there, having kids at the center. You know, we need to love, adore, nurture, care for our children, love them, discipline them, teach them, cherish them, find our joy in them as parents. But they're not the center of the universe. And it is not good for children to think that they are. I think that's an understatement. And I think he's onto something here. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Farmington, New Mexico. Sean's listening on WTGW. Go ahead, Sean.
Hello, Dr. Mohler. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
I have a comment about, you were talking about, the kids that are bad today, or not necessarily bad, but, I think that a lot of it has to do with the government taking control over families, and taking it out of the hands of the parents and putting it into the hands of the children, because they have government involvement. A child can cry child abuse, and it opened up a whole another Pandora's box of things for a family, because now the government's involved and they don't know the dynamic of your family, but they can certainly control it.
Yeah, Sean, I really appreciate the angle there. Let me kind of take that apart just for a moment and say, at least in the two cases we're talking about here, it doesn't look like government intervention is an issue. In the case especially, I think, of this boy in Mesquite, Texas, the government is actually asking the parents to parent. I mean, that's effectively what this school board has done. The school board put it back on the parents by saying it's a trade-off. This is one board member saying, do the parents value his education more than they value a four-year-old's decision to make his own grooming choices? I love the clarity of that, by the way. But, Sean, I have to tell you, in the larger sense, you're exactly right. Years ago, Christopher Lash, very interesting observer of the family in America, said that the family is being stripped of its purposes by the secular state. And that is something that you are exactly right to point to, because we have an entire realm of experts surrounding the family now, not all of them with the coercive power of law, some of them just with the power of, say, public attention, an entire realm of experts to come and tell parents how to parent, to intimidate parents out of doing what parents ought to do, especially with very liberal and secular worldviews driving their understanding of the child, of parenting, of discipline, and all the rest. But, Sean, you're also right that there are far too many cases in which the government has actually intervened to prevent parents from parenting. And this is really, really dangerous. And there's no doubt Sean was there talking about the corporal punishment of children, and that is spanking children. And I received a very interesting email from someone the other day saying, I have to wonder, when it comes to these laws against spanking, am I ready to become a criminal? Because I am going to discipline my child in a way that I believe the Bible mandates that I discipline my child. And, boy, we are looking at some scary stuff there. And that's why, you know, eternal vigilance in this case, politically speaking, is what we're called to, because we have got to make clear that parents do have not only the right, but the responsibility to discipline their children. And Sean, you're exactly right. We're being encroached upon by an entire world of professionals, from social workers to child therapists and psychiatrists and psychologists and all the rest. And then those with far more coercive power, child and family services and others, where I can just tell you that Christian parents in particular, are finding some real challenges there. And in a fallen world, we should expect that the state will eventually think it should parent our children rather than parents. That's something we should expect. It goes all back to Plato, for crying out loud. Well, it goes back to Adam and Eve. But just speaking of you know, explicit proposals to take children away from parents and let the state raise them, well, that's right back with Plato in his understanding of a utopia. And that temptation, it seems, is always with us. Sean, thanks for holding firm out there in New Mexico and for raising that issue with us. Other things coming in. My social media, just remember that the kinds of things that parents come to when they see other parents make this kind of judgment. When you have the parents of Tess Chapin, and let's face it, this is a 15-year-old girl who went to a party in which there was no adult present, and she drank and came home more than an hour late. You know, folks, that's not a minor thing. That's huge. At least in my parenting estimation, that is massive. No teenager should be at any kind of party. No teenager should be at another teenager's house without parents present. And let me tell you, if you don't fear God in that, at least fear a lawsuit. All right? And that should be made abundantly clear. And then when it comes to the drinking issue, oh, for crying out loud, she said it's just a first offense. I'm talking about a 15-year-old girl here. And then coming home late. You know, I remember coming home late one time when I was a teenager. And I had been out with a church group, so it wasn't as if I was out, late at a party. I was out with a church group, but we had gone to an after-church activity, and I came home late. And, I was awakened to the fact that my parents did not take that lightly. And I got it. I really did. I understood it and accepted the consequences. And I can just tell you that as a parent, I'm telling you, even in the day of cell phones, it's still important that you know exactly where your child is at every single moment, and that they be home exactly on time. And what I'm discovering is there are a lot of parents who use a cell phone as a negotiating instrument now. It's now a negotiating technology. Please, please do not allow yourself to become an endless negotiator about when your children come home. And they need desperately for you to hold firm. And there's just too much negotiating going on. I actually hear the other side of that conversation sometimes when I hear parents talking to their teenagers. And I'm telling you, once again, if you're not careful, it's the kid who's in charge. This little kid at 4 years old, Mesquite, Texas, what's he going to be like at 14? If he can lead that community into a board meeting because he doesn't want his hair cut and his parents won't make him? Oh my goodness, what's he going to be like at 14? Imagine his sixth grade teacher when he's 12. Well, folks, like I said, we got a problem. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, which means we look at these stories not just to step back in amazement and say, there by the grace of God go I, but rather to look at them and say, boy, this really reminds us. We have to think through the level of principle, the level of conviction, what we think parents are called to do. And then we got to find the backbone and go do it. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Today, of course, in the United States is a federal holiday, legal holiday, especially in most school districts across the country. It is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and that raises a host of issues for a lot of Christians, too, just in terms of thinking about how do we, on a day like this, think through some of those big pressing issues from race relations to personal identity and all the rest. There is no way, especially sometimes in the context of a media saturated age like this, to kind of step back and ask those questions without going back to some very fundamental issues. You know, looking at the whole question of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as his birthday as a day just reminds us that this whole question of race relations in the United States has a history. And it is certainly Certainly worth our attention to consider on this day and to talk about with our own children on this day what it means to live up to our American affirmation of who we are as a people, and far more than that, what it means to live up to a biblical understanding of what it means for every single human being to be made in the image of God, and what it means for every single human being to have human dignity, regardless of race, ethnicity, age, sex, or for that matter, point of development along the line from conception to natural death, and what it means to understand that as a nation we've had to struggle through so many of those questions. You know, when it comes to something like a day like this, there are a lot of people who step back and say, I'm not sure exactly how to talk about this with my children. Let me suggest that as you have a conversation with your children at the dinner table or elsewhere tonight, ask them to really ponder what it means when Dr. King said in his most famous address that this should be a nation that honors people and considers them by evaluation, not on the basis of the color of their skin, but the content of their character. That is the very essence, I think, of why a day like this raises many of the right questions. What would it mean if we really understood that we should honor and respect and draw our conclusions about people not on the basis of the color of the skin, but of the content of their character? You know, in reality, those words were just classically expressed by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the March on Washington now decades ago. But that particular principle is extremely biblical. And those who understand that every single human being is made in the image of God, well, we're the people who know that it's not just a question of how we come to conclude that it's not the color of skin, but the content of character that should be key. But frankly, how we even understand what character is. Good conversation with your kids as you do what parents are called to do. Parent. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.